Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today. My issue with perimenopause was bloating, inflammation. I was also super fatigued and I had a lot of trouble sleeping. Now it's easier to manage menopause with Hormone Harmony. I went to a party last weekend and I couldn't believe how many of the women I was talking to were saying that they were going through perimenopause and had no relief from bloating, gas, hot flashes, mood swings, and just not feeling themselves. And I got it. I told them. I've been there. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. Women can't stop talking about it on social media, and a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogen. Here's the beauty about adaptogen. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymama.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymama.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today. Imagine a life without sneezing, itchy eyes, or avoiding your friend's house because they have a cat. Thanks to Curex, allergies are no longer something you have to just deal with. Curex is America's largest online allergy clinic. I'm lucky that I'm the person in my family who has the least allergies, but my siblings and parents have struggled with allergies and needed allergy shots. But I understand they can be debilitating. The good news is allergies can be treated effectively and you can make allergic reactions a thing of the past. These allergy drops are trusted by doctors and backed by science with hundreds of studies from top institutions like Harvard Medical School and the Mayo Clinic. In fact, in Europe, allergy drops are the go-to treatment for allergies. If you're serious about kicking those allergies to the curb, check out Curex. Treatment starts as low as $59 a month, and if you sign up now, you can save 80% off of the $49 sign-up fee. Go to getcurex.com today for this limited time offer. Don't let allergies control your life. Take control with Curex. Go to getcurex.com. That's G-E-T-C-U-R. REX.com.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 450.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and this week we are following up on a subject that we started talking about last week when, in episode 449, we replayed a past interview with Dr. Sharon Martin, LCSW, about the communication patterns and boundaries and conflict management styles in families where the children often are left with their emotional needs unmet. So these would be families where the adult children may relate to having emotionally immature parents or toxic parenting or narcissistic parenting, or being parented by traumatized people, which is really the crux of it. And my guest this week is going to be continuing discussing that. We are back with Dr. Sharon Martin, LCSW, who I interviewed very recently about her newest book,
Cutting Ties with Your Parents. The full title of the book is Cutting Ties with Your Parents, a workbook to help adult children make peace with their decision, heal emotional wounds, and move forward with their lives. Of course, it's not a simple cut and dry situation. And in this conversation, Sharon and I talked about why adult children would potentially be considering cutting ties with their families, what comes up for them in making that decision, and what they experience, why they choose this, and how those who choose to cut ties with their families or their parents can move forward from the point of making that decision. So we had a really great conversation, and I can't wait for you to listen. So let's get right into it. And next week, we will be coming back to this topic again, so in a slightly different way. So I hope you will find this useful, and thank you as always for listening.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so happy to be back with my friend and colleague, Dr. Sharon Martin. Sharon, thank you so much for being my guest once again on Therapy Chat today.
Oh, thank you, Laura. It's my pleasure.
I always love talking with you, and I love what you put out into the world and the ways that you support people whose families are impacting them throughout their whole lives in ways that aren't always nice.
Yeah. It's hard to know what the best phrasing of that is, but yeah, maybe painful ways that continue to cause them some struggles and challenges in their lives. And I think that's often the case, is there's a sense or an expectation that once you get to an adulthood, you'll sort of put all of the difficulties of childhood behind you and you have that newfound freedom of adulthood. And yet it's not so clear cut like that. I mean, obviously what we've experienced in childhood has such an impact on who we are and how we see ourselves and how we interact with the world. But of course, those relationships with our families continue as well. And they don't necessarily change that much, is what I notice. Is, yes, you become an adult, but oftentimes if your family, your parents are still treating you as if you were a child and sometimes mistreating you, then the pain continues, right? The same family dynamics can continue well into adulthood. And I think sometimes that surprises us, thinking again, like, oh, it should shift because now I'm an adult. But there's really nothing magical about becoming an adult and even moving out of your family's home as well. Again, that's another one that people think, well, I'm out of their home. You know, I'm sort of free of that difficult environment. But for so many, it really just continues on in a fairly similar way in terms of the way they're communicating and interacting with their parents.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So true. And that's, you know, pretty much what I specialize in helping people with in my practice. And I know it is for you too. So for anybody who hasn't heard, somehow has missed any of your interviews that you've done on Therapy Chat, because not only have you done many, but I also replay them frequently. So, but for anybody who's missed them, can you tell people a little more about who you are, what you do, and also what your newest book is?
Yeah. Well, I say at this point that I specialize in helping people who have had difficult childhoods. And that's a pretty broad term, of course, and that can mean different things to different people. People who grew up in what we might call a dysfunctional family system. And again, that's a pretty broad term. Earlier on in my career, I really focused on adults who had grown up with parents who struggled with alcohol or substance use, and really just broadened that out over time, which I think is pretty true of our field in general, is that a lot of the material was really focused around substance use. And what we discovered essentially is the same dynamics were playing out with other kinds of family problems. So again, sometimes that's parents who are struggling with substance or parents who are struggling with mental health problems that are not treated or well managed. It can be rage. It can be any type of abuse. Verbal abuse is really common, physical abuse, sexual abuse. And again, this is dynamics that are happening to you when you're a child, as well as it continues often into adulthood as well. It can be a lot of chaos in the family so that there aren't clear boundaries, enmeshed families, and that really means that there isn't a definition of roles within the family and there aren't clear boundaries. So in an enmeshed family, sometimes you actually feel like we're all very close, but that closeness is not a healthy type of closeness because you're not able to individuate and separate from your family. There's a lot of expectations. There is a sense that you need to be loyal to your family at any cost. And so people often feel trapped in those relationships. And often, again, once you leave home, go off to college, whatever the case might be, get into other relationships, friendships or romantic relationships, is sometimes when we realize that we're kind of too close, or the family is sort of suffocating us in ways that doesn't allow us to fully be authentic and be our true selves. So those are just some of the ways. There's probably a multitude of other, you know, ways that it can show up. I would also say, I think it's important to remember that dysfunction, if you will, exists on a continuum. So we don't even necessarily need to say, this is dysfunctional, this is not dysfunctional. Yes, we could certainly lay out a criteria of functional family or healthier family, but there's no perfect family. There's no family that does it right all the time, and all families have conflicts and problems and those kinds of things. It's really about how are those things dealt with within the family? Are they addressed? Are problems solved? Can people talk about things? Or is the communication shut down? Is there a lot of conflict? Is there the inability to express yourself, set boundaries, and so forth?
Thank you. Thank you for the way you described that. And that's what I was writing as you said that. I wrote communication, you know, how families deal with conflict, how they communicate when there is conflict, because conflict is always something that in relationships, it's part of them. Unless people can't express what they feel, then it may look like there's no conflict. I can say, like, you know, with my own self, I, at one point during my early process in therapy, I wanted to learn to deal with conflict better because someone had told me that I was conflict avoidant, even though I didn't think I was. I thought I was a very nice person. But I went and tried to work with it in therapy, and I did work with it. But I realized that for my family, it was things weren't talked about. So when my parents got divorced when I was little, I was so really shocked. I could not remember any time I had ever seen my parents have any kind of conflict. And as a kid, if your parents are arguing a lot, you might worry that they would get divorced. But if, you know, things just aren't being addressed, it's probably more likely that, you know, they would get divorced if they, because they're just, there's problems that aren't being addressed.
Yeah. And it's often very confusing for children, not just that particular type of issue that's not being addressed, but kids have an uncanny ability to sense when something is wrong, something is off, there's tension within the family. And then if it's not being talked about, nobody's explaining anything to them, then they do what we all do, which is try to fill in the gaps, try to create a story that makes sense to explain, why is mommy doing that? Why is daddy yelling? Why is mom passed out on the couch? Why is nobody taking me to school? And inevitably, we then create stories about ourselves.
Yeah.
And generally, the story is, I've done something wrong. There's something wrong with me. And this is the guilt and shame that sticks with us. That's the only explanation I can come up with. Because, of course, as a small child or even as a teenager, we can't understand the intricacies of family dynamics and, you know, things like marital problems or mental health struggles or financial problems and, you know, all the different things that could be at play. you know, in our parents' lives that we don't understand. So it's really confusing for kids as well when we're not talking to them about problems. And of course, we need to do it in an age-appropriate, developmental appropriate way. It can also be problematic if parents are telling their kids about all of their marital problems in a way that is overwhelming or, you know, really just lacking a boundary with their children as well. So we need to, you know, find the right place to do that, the right way to do that for them. But yeah, either extreme can be problematic.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we really talk more about that, I actually want to give you a chance to tell everyone, what is your new book and what's it about?
Yes, thank you. You asked me and then I forgot to mention it. I got carried away on dysfunctional families.
Me too.
Yes, yes.
They tend to take up a lot of space, dysfunctional families.
Well, you know, and this is a book about dysfunctional families and ultimately what can happen in some dysfunctional families. This book is called Cutting Ties with Your Parents. And as the title explains, it is a book for adult children who are making or have made the very painful decision to sever ties with their parents. It's focused on parents, although I think a lot of the book applies to other family relationships as well. If that's where the struggle is and you're ending a relationship with, you know, a grandparent or a sibling or somebody else. But in any case, that is the focus of this book, is really trying to understand and validate that decision and let folks know that there are situations where it is absolutely the right decision. It is a necessary decision. It is the result of, in my experience, years and years and years of trying to make the relationship work, having exhausted every possible attempt, solution that you can try to come up with. You've tried it all, essentially, and gotten to this place where the only path forward seems to be to end the relationship or seriously limit the contact that you have with that family member so that you can do the healing work that you know that you need to do and move forward with your life in some new and fulfilling ways, create healthier relationships, you know, and I would say really just sort of be able to finally move out of that dysfunctional family system that you have, like I said, not been able to find a way out of in ways that, you know, most people expect us to just either suck it up and deal with it. That's your family. That's who you've got. You should love them and show up for them and do all of the, you know, family type of things, regardless of how they are treated. And as I say in the book, I can't get on board with that idea as a person and as a mental health professional that you should just sacrifice your well-being, your mental health, to make somebody else happy, whether that's your parents or society at large, whoever it is that it is expecting you to be a part of a family that is causing you a lot of pain.
Yeah. Oh, my. Yeah, I agree. And I'm thinking about, we're both social workers, and social work is a systems theory based approach to mental health, whatever it is, right? And when, you know, we learn that systems can be closed or they can be open. And in families where it's really closed, you know, who's allowed in and who's allowed out and how much you're really allowed to think outside the box, express outside the box, it can feel extremely oppressive when, you know, one is unable to express who they are, whether it's related to their thoughts and opinions about things, their political views, their religious beliefs, their gender expression, the way they dress, the who they partner with, their sexual identity. There's so many aspects of who we are, what they do for their career, if they have a career, you know, there's so many ways that family can, with often rooted in the best intentions, kind of cause us to have a decision between abandoning the family or abandoning ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very well put, Laura, that often is the dilemma that people are faced with. And one of the other things that I feel like I repeat often to clients or in my writing is the idea that there are many times when we are faced with making a choice and there are no good choices. There is no, you know, way to do this where you can sort of have it all. But that's part of the acceptance that we need to get to, is accepting people for who they are, accepting the family system for the way that it is functioning. Because if we keep trying to change something and it never changes, right, that becomes that act of futility. And that's very discouraging. You can feel very hopeless in that situation. And again, I think we often internalize that and saying, what's wrong with me? Why can't I make this better? Because again, there's I think that's a prevailing attitude that we have, is that if you try hard enough, you'll be able to change things. You'll be able to make this relationship work. And sometimes that's the case, but sometimes it is not. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in recognizing when something is not going to change and you need to remove yourself from it as the only way to protect yourself. But again, that's not what anybody wants to do. Nobody wants to have no contact with their family. And I think this is one of the things that is often really misunderstood about adult children who are making this decision. They're often seen as selfish or uncaring. They don't care about their parents. They don't care about their family. And that has simply not at all been my experience. Really, what I see is the opposite, is people who have tried and tried and care and care. Otherwise, they would have left, quite honestly, years before. But they keep sticking with it because they do care and they do try and they want it to work. But there are, unfortunately, some family systems that are really so dysfunctional. And there are some people who are unwilling or unable to make the changes that would need to be made in order for there to be a healthy relationship with their family. And those are the situations that we're really talking about in this book and in our conversation today. I'm not trying to suggest that every family conflict should end in us cutting ties. I think, again, sometimes that seems like it's the attitude that people, they think that's what's going on, is it's a very rash decision. But it really isn't. I've, quite honestly, in 25 years of this work, I have never encountered anybody who just, you know, said one day out of the blue or one argument, it has really been such a difficult decision for folks getting to that place, because it goes against everything that we're taught about family relationships, that they are the most important relationships that are supposed to last forever. And in an ideal world, they would.
They would, but if they were safe.
Yes.
Like lasting forever and everyone in the family could be safe. But if it's impossible to be safe within a family system, I feel that's when, you know, and I'm including emotional safety and even
yes,
safety to live as who you are. You know, I mean, there are so many people who are rejected and sent off by their family, sent away and shunned. But there are other people who are rejected and shunned within their families, but the family doesn't want to let them escape, you know? So it's like,
right,
we don't want you, but you can't leave, you know? It's a pretty awful situation. And
that is, again, very well put. That, I mean, there's sort of something ironic about it, is we're going to tell you how wrong you are and how bad you are and how much we disapprove of who you are and what you're doing. But yes, there's a certain amount of families who then, but we're going to try to control you. And I think that's probably what a lot of it comes down to, is maybe for some, there's a sense of punishment. We disapprove, so we want to punish you. But I think that's also part of this larger issue of control. And that's part of what I was talking about earlier in terms of, you know, when parent-child relationships do not move out of those structures where the parent has the control and the power, right? It makes sense that when children are small, they need their parents to have some control and some power, right? That makes sense. But as we grow up, that needs to change. If we're going to continue to have a relationship as an adult with our parents, we don't want to have a relationship with somebody who is continuing to exert control over us, because we are a full-grown adult who can make their own decisions. And if your parents do not recognize that, right, that is that oppressive system that we were talking about, that relationship where somebody is controlling you. And I think it reminds me of when we talk about romantic relationships where there is abuse that is going on, right? We're very well aware that those are power and control issues. And this is not very different. Whereas the nature of the relationship is different, but that same structure is there that is causing the problem, is one person is trying to exert control over the other. And right, as you have been pointing out, that creates this, you know, inability for us to be ourselves, because we've got, you know, somebody continuing to push down on us, saying, you know, fit into this little mold of who I want you to be and what I think you should be doing.
Right. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's been seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. After doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also supports the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. I've noticed that when I feed my dogs regular supermarket brands, they have more itchy skin, scratching their ears, behavior issues, agitation. And when I feed them healthy whole foods, superfoods, they're calmer, happier, and not having those skin issues and ear discomfort. Go to badlandsranch.com/chat and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/chat today. Ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level? I can't stop telling everybody about my new FeatherSnap bird feeder. It's a Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeder, blending the best of technology and nature. I've enjoyed so much since we got this thing set up, looking up close at the birds. When they land on the feeder, I get a notification to my phone with a picture. There's three pictures every time a bird lands on the feeder. And I get to see some cool action shots. I can see their faces close up, their eyes, their feathers, the detail on their heads. It's amazing. I've enjoyed seeing woodpeckers, goldfinches, male and female, house finches, chickadees, tufted titmouse, blue jay, a few squirrels. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months. And with that, I just have to say that it's so common, I'll say from 22 years of experience working in gender-based violence, that People who are in abusive and controlling adult relationships so often have experienced the same kind of control and disempowerment in their family of origin. So, which is, you know, they oftentimes it's escaping this one into this new, just as controlling situation. Meanwhile, oftentimes family of origin is here trying to drag you out of the abusive relationship because they don't like the partner, because they don't like how the partner's treating you. And then they treat you the same way. they don't have respect for your autonomy, I think is the piece that it's autonomy is not being allowed. There's a really important thing that you said that I want to ask about. When you said, I'd just like you to clarify this. When you said that we have to accept people for who they are and accept the family system for what it is, in I think our popular conversation about dealing with conflict in our family of origins, that could be interpreted as you just have to accept your family. This is how they are. You just have to accept this is how your family are, meaning you have to accept them treating you that way and you're not allowed to break away from it. Or accepting your parents for who they are. This is just who they are. They're mean. They're rigid. They're controlling. They abuse you. And that's just what you have to accept. And I know that's not the kind of acceptance that you're talking about.
No, it's a good point. And, you know, fair to clarify that, because you're right. I mean, we can sort of take that either way. But in this context, I'm really talking about acceptance as a precursor or an important part of knowing that it is okay to prioritize your own well-being. And if that means taking that space, distancing yourself from your family, that you're doing that with the understanding that that acceptance of, I know this is what is going on, I know this is who they are, and I'm no longer invested in trying to change somebody or something that has shown me time and again that it is not going to change. Yeah, so we're not talking about trying to accept it from that standpoint of it's okay. It's like knowing what is maybe,
yeah,
maybe a different way of putting it is, yeah, I mean, if we sort of think about, well, I mean, right, it doesn't mean we when we accept something, I mean, I think that is just sort of opening our eyes to the reality of it. And then that informs our decisions. And the decision does not need to be, oh, I need to just go along with it.
If I can bend into a different shape, a different pretzel, then it'll change, or then I'll be accepted, or they'll leave me alone, stop doing that.
Right, right. Because if we don't accept what the reality of the situation is, that's when we keep trying and trying and trying, is because I think that I'm going to be able to influence a change here. And again, that's a really tough thing to accept, is, you know, that we can't.
We don't want that to be true.
Right, because that means that now that option, that fantasy, that dream is not going to be my reality, right? Because that has been, I think for a lot of folks, that is what's driving all those years of trying to make the relationship work, is, again, both a lot of that social pressure, but also this sort of fantasy that if only this would change, right? Sort of the classic, if only they would get sober, or if only they would get treatment, or if only, you know, somebody would go to therapy and they would understand X, Y, and Z, then we could have this family that I have always dreamed of. My parents would love me in these ways. They'd have unconditional love for me. They'd respect me. They'd treat me differently. And boy, that's a powerful dream.
Gosh, that dream
is
really powerful.
Because, of course, we all want that, right? I mean, that is what we are all wanting, craving. I think there's some sort of biological pull towards that, as well as everything that we're taught, the conditioning towards this is what we all should have. This is the way families are supposed to work. But again, there's the necessary component of recognizing that not all families are going to be that way, no matter what you do.
Right, because it was never really about what you were doing anyway. Something in the structure is not really healthy.
Yes. I mean, we all need to do our best to be the healthiest versions of ourselves, but that can't necessarily change the entire family structure. There's probably a little bit of some pieces here that maybe not may not make complete sense, or that are maybe contradictory, because certainly one person can influence the family system, but that's not the same as being able to change other people. So I think, again, there's maybe a piece of acceptance of where can I influence change, and where's the limit of that, and recognizing that I'm not going to be able to, for example, you know, get somebody to stop being emotionally dysregulated or having a lot of, you know, mental health problems. I'm not going to be able to get them to not be depressed anymore, right? That is beyond what I can do. I've done what I could do to be supportive, to try to encourage, right, change and healthier relationships and healthier dynamics. But again, I think there's something that can be useful in accepting the limits of what you as an individual can do, and where your personal responsibility lies in all of this as well, because you are not responsible for everybody else's mental health and well-being and trying to make the family work better. Because again, I mean, you can't make other people, other adults do things.
We can only change ourselves.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and when we remember that and when we work from that place, that's really much more empowering.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned that fantasy of what we want the family to be. And I don't think that it's, you mentioned it being biological in some ways. And I don't think that it's just like everybody has that fantasy. I think that there's maybe probably with oxytocin, there's like this way that we need to be held within a certain feeling of family, that the attachments are safe and secure, and that if at all possible to tell ourselves that, you know, we can count on it. It's what our, you know, even when it's really, really, really not working, if we can tell ourselves it's okay, it allows us to survive within that system. But I feel like the fantasy can be a way that we are soothing, you know, biologically being soothed when we're really not getting what we need to. And then I feel like that's part of why it's so hard to break out of that when you really didn't have enough of what you need. You're clinging so much to that fantasy. No, it's perfect. Mom and dad were perfect. They did everything. They were the best. They were better than all the other families, you know. And I know we've talked about this before, but that's always like kind of a red flag, because no family is perfect and no parents are the best parents ever. You know, hopefully there was enough love and they were trying their best and they were trying to be, and they were safe enough and they were able to maybe reflect and repair when they did not get it right, as, you know, that's really what we can do. But so with the acceptance piece, and you've alluded to this, I know it's in your book, that to see that, to see it for how it is, that this isn't utopia. This isn't, you know, Xanadu. This is a group of people. The parents had their own trauma, you know, and they didn't know what to do, and they didn't know how to protect, or they didn't know how to not be violent, or whatever it was. And when you accept that, I can say from my own experience how sometimes seeing things as they really are can feel shattering to our psyche and bring up an incredible amount of trauma and grief.
Yes. Yes. You're right. I think that it sort of flows right into that, because once we are grounded in reality, then there is all this sense of loss. And sometimes that is sort of literal, you know, loss, the loss of relationships, but it is also this loss of that fantasy. It's the loss of what I'm hoping for, craving, wanting in the future, and recognizing that if I'm not going to have a relationship with my family, then obviously we're not going to have this fantasy, healthy family relationship where we all sit around and, you know, sing Kumbaya and, you know, play board games or whatever, you know, you think that's going to be. Right now, again, we're in the reality of I'm putting this space here. And so this is a very important piece of what needs to happen, is the ability to grieve what has been lost. And it's a really tough thing. I mean, I think in general, most of us aren't real keen on the idea of grief work. In general,
doesn't feel good to feel that much pain. No.
Right. Nobody's like, yeah, I definitely want to do that. And I would say, I think it is extra challenging when we're talking about family estrangement and the losses, because a lot of them are intangible things that have been lost. They're hard to put your finger on. And I see it as they're sort of ripples. You may be cutting ties with your parents, but quite often there are other relationships that are lost as well, because people feel like they need to take sides within the family, and or they just don't want to be in the middle of it. So they just, you know, they stop having contact with you as well. And there are things like family history, a family home, favorite family recipe, photos. I mean, there's all these different things that you may no longer have access to that, again, may not be at the forefront of your mind, but they're different types of losses that are those ripples from the loss of the relationship that's the most obvious piece of it. So in any case, you know, it is really important to deal with that. And in the book, there's some very structured ways and activities that people can do so that they can do that work and recognize those losses and process them. You know, what we know as therapists, of course, is that it's really important that we do this kind of work, because if we don't, it tends to just keep showing up in different ways, in different relationships, and different kinds of losses that come later in our lives that this starts poking out. So even though it's hard, I think it's really helpful for us to do it. And again, that's part of the healing. It's part of the being able to move forward with our lives, is dealing with the emotional pain that is part of this.
Yeah, I feel like it's the grief is kind of like what that fantasy was keeping away too. It's like knowing that my parents did not accept me unconditionally. And that means either I'm messed up or they might be messed up. And, you know, it's like, I can remember like having thoughts about my parents, like as an adult, and I'm going to say probably at least in my 30s, could even be 40s, where I'm like, oh, they don't feel that, or they wouldn't have that problem or something, just like as if they're like some superhuman ideal instead of just a person who was a baby just like I was one time, you know, and they grew up in a family just like I did, and their parents were also just trying to figure it out too. And this superhero ideal that we can have with our parents, well, they're not supposed to feel this, or well, they shouldn't have to do that because that's not what parents have to do. But then, you know, I think one of the things is when you become a parent yourself, for those who choose that and are able to do that, it's like, whoa, first of all, even if they try to act like they had it all figured out, they didn't, because no one can. It's really complicated.
Yes, yes, that is true.
So I know we talked about that the grieving part is hard and painful, but I don't want people to hear this and think, ugh, I can't, I'm not ready for that, it's too hard. Because one of the things I was thinking about when we were talking about how painful it is that it's like what one has endured up until the point that they make this difficult decision. What I see is that it's often been more painful before than how it feels. There's grief and it's sad, but it's also like real. It feels authentic. And it feels like, yes, these are my true feelings about this.
it almost feels productive in the sense that, again, like this is going to help us move forward instead of keeping us stuck.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's a lot of emotion to deal with. But again, to me, it feels like that's important work because it is part of the healing process of actually we're going sort of through it so that we can get beyond it rather than just staying stuck in the, okay, we're stuck in this dynamic of my parents keep doing these things that are causing me emotional and or physical pain. And certainly there's something to be said for knowing what that is like and you're sort of comfortable in it. I'm not saying it's not at all painful, but it's sort of a known entity.
Familiar, yeah.
And now we're sort of asking you to have this painful experience that's the part of the healing process. But maybe it's helpful even if we just frame it that way so that it feels like, okay, this is the stepping stone. It's this important step along the path that is going to really be able to help us deal with the trauma and the painful stuff that has happened to us, knowing that we're on this path out of it, that we're removing ourselves from that ongoing painful relationship dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead of trying to build strength to endure it better, we're saying, I don't have to endure this. I am an adult and I can make my own choices about how I want my life to be. So as we come towards the end of our conversation for this time, can you say a little bit about what you see people feeling on the other side of the grief part and when they've made this decision and kind of worked through what it brings up?
Yeah, I'll try.
Of course, it, you know, varies, but.
Yeah, of course. People are different, of course. But one of the reasons that I wanted to write this book is that I hope that it is hopeful, that it does give people hope for their own future, for their own healing. It gives them, again, practical ways to go about that, but also to see that there is a life beyond that stuckness, that, you know, being trapped in that dysfunctional family, that you can create a different, more fulfilling life for yourself, healthier relationships for yourself, even a different type of chosen family, that there are lots of different kinds of families that exist. And we are not limited to just the family that we grew up in. That's not our only option for family. One of the things that I have noticed in the clients that I have worked with over the years is I've seen how much healing can happen for them when they are able to get that distance from their family. And again, I think that can be really helpful for people when you're struggling with the decision of, is this the wrong thing to do? Is remembering that sometimes, maybe always, I don't know, but I think it can be really helpful to have that space. One of the things I will say is that how can you do the healing work when you are continuing to be bombarded with more abuse?
So true.
Right? If you are continuing to, right, to be abused, you don't have the bandwidth to do the healing work. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I want to say this is true for everybody, or at least most of the time, or it would just be a tremendous amount to ask of yourself to be able to do healing work. Because really what's happening is you're in the abusive relationship. All you're doing is trying to stay afloat. You are just trying to keep your head above water. You are enduring it, but there's no, you don't have the emotional wherewithal, you know, the physical strength, the stamina, you know, the emotional reserves to do any of the healing work, you know. So that's, I think, one of the greatest benefits.
It's not really a safe ground for you to be able to be doing that work.
No, absolutely not. And again, right, if we think about this, you know, from our therapist's point of view, is, right, healing happens when we have emotional safety, right? We feel safe. We're in an environment where we feel supported. We feel safe. We feel like we're able to take risks. We're able to process our feelings. So that's all very important to us. And I think that's why it's helpful to remember that sometimes space is really the gateway to the healing that is really going to sort of bring us to that place of being able to have a sense of self-esteem, well-being, good mental health, you know, feeling good about ourselves, being able to do the things in our lives that we want to be able to do. Yeah, and I think that's something that everybody deserves.
Yeah, me too. I think the world would be a better place if everybody could really live in their fullest expression of who they are, whatever that is, and not be trying to control how everybody else feels. Just, you know, like when I grew up with hippie parents, free to be you and me was the thing. And, you know, it sounds maybe a little corny, but what's wrong with being free to be who you are? I think it's part of the problem that goes on.
Well, and I think it really is an important component of good mental health is that being able to feel that and to be able to live that, to feel like you are free to be yourself and make your own decisions and do what is right for you and not have other people telling you who you should be and how you should be and what you should be doing and so forth.
Sharon, I'm excited about your book and I'm so grateful. I know by the time this goes live, it will be out. So people can find it everywhere books are sold, I'm guessing?
Yes.
Great. And if they want to learn more about you and what you do, where would they find you?
Yeah, my website is livewellwithsharonmartin.com. So yeah, there you can find all of my resources and articles and links to the book and so forth. So yes, please stop on by. And yes, the book should be available from most bookstores.
Wonderful. Well, Sharon, thank you so much once again for coming back to Therapy Chat. I always love talking with you. And by the way, everyone, she's a TTN member too. So I love seeing you in TTN when you can make it. And even in person when I'm in San Francisco Bay Area.
Yes, once in a long while.
Once in a long while. Yeah.
But thank you, Laura. It's always great talking with you. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this topic and this book and share it with everybody.
It's going to help so many people. Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.